Live from New York City, it's The Gary Null Show. And now, your host, Gary Null.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Null. Video streaming live and broadcasting for the first time in 4 months from our studios in New York City. I welcome all of you from all over the United States and all over the world. Today, the latest on health and healing. As always, we begin our show something new. If you want to protect yourself against radiation, black plum leaf. If you want to understand dementia, look at the high-carb diet. If you want to know how to lower your blood pressure, see what the vegetarians have been doing. And if you want to increase your risk of Alzheimer's and diabetes, just keep eating the meat. That and a lot more on health and nutrition. My guest in the second part of our program is Greg Braden, and we're going to talk about the need to create individual and community resilience in a time of extremes. And he's an internationally recognized pioneer over 30 years in the dialogue to bring together ancient wisdom, modern spirituality, and the insights of innovative science and discovery. And by the way, you can go to Ustream TV and channel, and then go to Gary Null. It's Ustream.tv, then Gary Null, and you can watch. Let's begin. First off, we have an epidemic of Alzheimer's and dementia, and you really have to look at it in stages. Short-term memory loss. Then for anywhere between a year to 3 or 4 or 5 years, then the beginning of dementia, where you're uncertain where you're at. In fact, recently I was told that there was a very famous person who was going to be doing some lecture in a city that I was filming in. And so I thought, what the heck? So I went over, and the person, you know, gave me a hug and said, oh, it's so good to see you, Gary. And I talked with him for about 15 minutes because there were 1,000 people there waiting on him. And he forgot virtually everything that we had been talking about concerning his diet and helping him. He then had to ask me, what city are we in? And I told him the city. He's all. He would ask that 3 times. That's dementia. So you go from short-term memory loss to dementia, and then when you're completely disconnected from your environment, the people in it, where you don't recognize people, Alzheimer's. And each one of these has a curve. So right now you're looking at 100 million Americans who are over the age of 40. And because of how much exposure people have had in the last generation to computers, cell phones, high levels of stress, lots of processed foods, lots of alcohol, they have speeded up the aging of the brain. They've destroyed billions of neurons. And so what you would have expected in someone 70, you can now reasonably expect in someone 40, depending upon what they've done. How many times have you just held a cell phone to your brain, never thought anything of it? Now we realize that there's no safe level of a cell phone in a given week outside of 2 minutes. 2 minutes per week. And some people are using it 2 to 3 hours a day. That's what causes dementia, Alzheimer's, memory loss. Let's add one more thing in here. This is from the Icahn School of Medicine at Mount Sinai. Eating grilled meat, quote, increases the risk of Alzheimer's and diabetes. I would add on to that dementia and memory loss. This was published in the Proceedings of the National Academy of Sciences. And Americans love barbecue. They love grilled. They love deep fried. They like well done. In fact, figure states 62% of Americans use our grills all year round. And what happens is that when you have that heat on an animal product, like broiled fish, broiled meats, broiled chicken, what you do is you increase the chemicals, and that leads to harming the brain and diabetes is called glycation. And you've heard me mention this so many times. That's why we should be eating more raw food, lightly cooked food, meaning just enough, even brown rice. People will boil the water and then they'll overcook the rice. You should just bring the water up to where it's hot and then let the brown rice cook slower. And that way it does not destroy the nutrients in the brown rice. It only opens up the shell, making it easier to digest. So every time you have anything that's broiled, charcoaled, deep fried, you're destroying brain cells. But then add on to that the newest studies from Dr. David Perlmutter, and you see that it's the carbohydrates in our diet that also cause dementia. This is from Medical News Today. Quote, even small increases in blood sugar caused by a diet high in carbohydrates can be detrimental to brain health. Reports show that there's a link between carbohydrate diets and the shrinkage in your brain, which leads to dementia and Alzheimer's, impaired cognition, and other disorders. So think of it this way. A sandwich. You know, the sandwich, the ham sandwich, grilled cheese sandwich. The bread is a carbohydrate. It's going to be digested almost like sugar. Whatever meat you have, that had to be cooked in order for it to kill the bacteria, otherwise you would end up getting food poisoning. The cooking process at the temperatures they use is enough to create a very toxic chemical. So you've got acrylamides and heterocyclic amines, two toxins together in one meal. A hamburger, a hot dog, pizza. These are absolutely disasters for your brain. So, another study. But what can you do that's good? Well, how about a healthy vegetarian diet? This is the latest from the Journal of the American Medical Association's Internal Medicine. They took a look at 21,600 participants, and what they found was this, quote, vegetarians seem to have lower blood pressure, and so adopting a vegetarian diet is a useful strategy for lowering blood pressure. And that means you're going to protect your heart. That means you're going to have less opportunity to die of a stroke or heart attack. So this was done in Osaka, Japan, and meta-analysis, meaning looking at many different studies. Quote, the meta-analysis found that vegetarian diets are associated with lower blood pressure compared to omnivorous diets. So that's big. So you wouldn't have the Journal of the American Medical Association endorsing something unless it was really strong when it comes to diet. Because traditionally, your orthodox medical and scientific publications have not endorsed a vegetarian diet. Now they are. We have over 600 studies in the peer-reviewed literature showing that a healthy vegetarian diet will lower your incidence of disease and give you a longer lifespan. Black plum leaf found to harness radioprotective properties. This was from the Kasturba Medical College in India. They found that the survival rate of mice exposed to radiation was dramatically increased when they received black plum leaf extract. So just imagine all the different ways we're exposed to radiation. Think of the people in Japan from Fukushima. Think of the people in the United States that get unnecessary x-rays or even necessary x-rays. So the idea was to try something that hadn't been used before. Quote, those that received a no black plum leaf extract had a survival rate of only 12%. Among black plum extract groups, the survival rate was 66%. Quote, black plum leaf is designed to be effective against radiation. It is rich in flavonoid, glycosides, quercetin, Myricetin. So that's good. So to protect yourself against radiation, go into a health food store and get yourself some black plum leaf extract. Also, psychological side effects of antidepressants are worse than thought. This is the University of Liverpool. The university showed that that thoughts of suicide, sexual difficulties, emotional numbness were the results of antidepressants. This was a survey of over 1,800 individuals who had been prescribed antidepressants. And in large numbers, over half, they reported psychological problems due to their medication. Here's my thoughts on this. Excuse me, this was published in Psychiatry Research. We are not sitting with people and talking with them about the conditions in their life that may have contributed to their psychological distress. Instead, the first option is always write a pill, a prescription for a pill. That does not change the underlying cause of a person's depression. For that, you need counseling. You need to become aware of your choices. You need guidance. You need positive affirmations. You need positive input. We're not getting it. All we're getting is take this pill. And that is causing serious side effects. Also, in a very positive way, strawberries are lowering cholesterol. This is from the Spanish Foundation for Science and Technology, published in the Journal of Nutritional Biochemistry. A team of researchers found that eating strawberries every day for a month altered blood parameters and dropped their cholesterol down. It was only 500 grams. Let's see. It would be about about a bowl of strawberries a day. So that's not difficult. Now, you could blend those, and you would also get benefit. Also, vitamin D keeps diabetes away. And vitamin D is actually a hormone that is produced when the skin is exposed to sunlight. And now we're seeing that depression and pain are commonly seen in women with type 2 diabetes. Several research studies also examine, excuse me, how relieving the pain may decrease the depression. But they hadn't tested vitamin D. And when they did, they found out that vitamin D was important in alleviating diabetes and its pain. So, if you have neuropathy, pain, that burning and shooting pain in the legs and feet, they found 74% reported improvements in the tingling in the fingers, the legs, the hands. So, vitamin D and diabetic pain. And finally, fennel, just delicious tasting fennel. I like to use it in salads, by the way. Gives you that licorice taste. Can help neutralize cancer and encourage weight loss. This is one of the things that can help. And we know that fennel's been around for at least 2,000 years. It was very popular among Roman society and those in Greece that wanted to practice healthy living. It assists the body, especially the kidneys, the spleen, the liver, the lungs, and digestive system. And now it's rich in phytoestrogens, and it's a very good source of folate, potassium, fiber, and vitamin C. All of those are cardiovascular protective. It is also helping remove carcinogenic toxins from the colon. And at a university in Korea, they discovered that simply inhaling fennel's essential oil greatly helped in laboratory digestion of food. Fennel acts as a chemo preventative agent against carcinogens. As with most of your herbs, fennel is a very potent antioxidant. And according to studies at University of Texas MD Anderson Cancer Center, showed that it has exceptional anti-inflammatory properties because of its phytonutrient, one specifically called anthiol. And this particular component contributes to not only blocking inflammation, but also in the transformation of regular cells into carcinogen. And the experiments conducted in rats in New Delhi, India, have made scientists realize that fennel seeds have a chemoprotective effect, although it does so in a slower way, but it's very important. So in India, by the way, it's very common for individuals to take a half a teaspoon of fennel seeds and chew on them after a meal. It helps facilitate digestion. Now we know it also can help prevent cancer. I'm Gary Knoll. That's the latest on health and nutrition. Coming up in a few moments, we're going to talk with a guest down in New Mexico, Greg Braden, on the need to create individual and community resilience in a time of extremes. But when we come back from our music break, we'll be talking about why do we fear the truth. Also, we're going to take a look at America's most dangerous pill. Please stay with us. Back in a moment.
I fell asleep late last night, and I dreamed that the night and almost half the day away. I just got up so that I could hear her say she's still in love, and no one could take her love away. Ooh, love wakes me up every day, and I thought no one could ever make me feel this way. It fills me up.
I'd like to welcome all of you. I'm Gary Knoll, broadcasting and video streaming live from our studios in New York City. In a few moments, we're going to go over to Why Do We Fear the Truth from Robert Burrows, Nation of Change. You can watch by going to ustream.tv channel and then look for Gary Knoll. First day back, in fact, just hours back, a long trip, nearly 4 months. And people ask, well, why do you go out there and spend so much time on the road? It's simple. How are you going to make a film that has meaning unless you go to where the person is or persons that you're going to get their story? And you can't rush these things. You have to find the person who's open and honest and vulnerable to let you in, to let you see how they live. Now ask yourself, when do you like to have people see you? When you're your best? When your hair is cut and groomed, and when you're clean, when you have, you know, clothes that suit you, and it's natural for people to want to show their best. But what if when you wake up each day, there is no best, and there's a reason for that, where you've been forgotten, where you've been discarded, whether you're in a vet that wakes up in the woods or under a bridge. I found people on this trip that were sleeping veterans, and regular people, including a former professor that was sleeping in the car. How do you wake up in a car when you don't have a bathroom, you don't have a place to shave and wash? How are you supposed to feel better about that? But I was fortunate enough to be able to get their stories so that we can see what they're going through, how they got there, and so how we as a society can understand their plight and be able to help them. But fortunately, it's all done. We're working in post-production, and this should be ready in the next 4 months. I have a special today, and this special is Ageless Answer. One of the ways that I help myself, my skin, and if you see, I'm here under 400 watt lights, no makeup, and my skin is healthy, vibrant. And it's not just because of what I eat and drink. More often than not, it's what I drink, because when I'm on the road, it's mainly the juices that I make. But I make sure that every day I put on Ageless Answer. The Sage of Sancer is a unique combination of nutrients, and it took a long time to develop this, to create it. But look at any of the other expensive age prevention or skin products that are on the market. I don't see where they do any good. I see they have to oversell themselves, get million-dollar contracts with famous people, so you buy something based upon the illusion that if a famous person is endorsing it, must be good. No, then you look at the ingredients. I want people to look at the ingredients of Asia's Answer, the skin revitalizing cream. Here's my number one ingredient. Organic, grown in the USA, down in the Rio Grande Valley of Texas. Aloe vera, but not just any aloe vera. The aloe vera called Barbandinus, which is the best of all the aloe, with a infusion of herbs and purified water, Siberian ginseng, the Eleutherococcus sinicosus, the extract of red clover, isoflavon extract, soybean extract, fermented extracts, the extract of shiitake mushroom, the extract of manitate, which is a Ganoderma insidium, and other mushroom extracts, metafoam, seed oil, the vegetable glycerin, and then combinations of blue-green algae, red marine algae, vegetable squalene, rosehip seed oil, chardonnay, grape, the ascorbyl palmitate, which is a fat-soluble vitamin C, lipid extracts, phospholipid lecithin, the marine collagen, and vitamin E, coenzyme Q10, borage seed oil, evening primrose oil, retinol, palmitate, which is vitamin A, beta-glucan, lycopene, and a natural, really wonderful light almond vanilla flavoring. So you smell it and it's really, the fragrance blend is perfect. And you put it on your hands, your face, your neck, wherever you have bad, rough, dry, wrinkled skin. And you put it on before you go to bed at night, after you wash your hands. And then in the morning, see how your skin looks, how it feels. You could also put it on in the daytime. And when I'm out training, and I'm training hard now, long miles, I just did the National 20K Championship this past Sunday, and I had to leave before the award ceremony. I'll find out when I get a medal in the mail. I think I got the gold, I don't know. In any case, when you're out training, your skin takes a beating. So I put Asia's Answer on my face, on my skin. It makes all the difference. So that's what we're offering. Haven't offered this in a long time. Ageless Answer. Then, on top of that, not only are you getting that at 4 ounces, which is about a 4-month supply at a great discount, but you're also getting this, Stay Young Forever. This is a 3-hour documentary where I went around the world to find out how people are living longer from the experts in each area. There's revolutionary material in here. Staying Young Forever. Everything about staying youthful. That's free when you call and call a number, 877-627-5065. 877-627-5065. So you're going to get, for just $57.99, that's a $70 savings. $70 savings. You're going to get the Ageless Answer Skin Cream, the Revitalizing Cream for 4 ounces, and you're going to get a 3-hour documentary, Staying Young Forever. All right, call 877-627-5065. And guys, a lot of guys don't pay attention to their skin. You should. You should be able to have healthy, vibrant skin. And especially on your neck. When I was flying late last night back into the city, I was noticing how many people don't pay attention to their necks, and their necks really take a beating. And there's no reason for that. We could prevent that. So Ageless Answer is part of that. Give a call now, 877-627-5065. Question: why do we fear the truth? According to Robert Burroughs, if we want to take appropriate action to fix something that is not working properly, then it is necessary to understand precisely the nature of the problem. Now, obviously, if our diagnosis is inaccurate, then the solution applied is unlikely to work. And this principle of needing to understand a problem accurately before we can devise and implement an appropriate solution applies in all fields of human endeavor, whether it's a mechanical, scientific, health or environmental problem, or a conflict at any level of human relations. The most important impediment to understanding and resolving any problem or conflict is our fear of knowing the truth. We spend a lot of our time trying to deal with problems and conflicts by deluding ourselves about the cause or the solution. For example, the truth is that many people are addicted to using violence in one or more forms. We want to reserve the right to use violence to control or discipline our children. We want to pretend that our unhealthy diet is not the cause of our ill health if we like eating all those unhealthy foods. We want to be able to consume more than we really need and pretend that the ongoing destruction of the natural environment and our bodies and the accelerating climate catastrophe are unrelated to our own behavior. Or we want to buy those cheap consumer goods made by exploited workers in China and other places, frequently with child labor, and in those factories in Africa and Asia, Central and South America, where the largest corporations are less encumbered by such considerations as requirement to pay fair wages and taxes, and to address health and safety concerns, and to consider other human rights and environmental issues. And we want to blame always people for our conflicts, if looking ourselves deeply in the mirror might tell us something about ourselves we don't want to know. But if we want to deal adequately with any problem or conflict, first of all, we need to be courageous enough to acknowledge the truth, including any truth about ourselves. Why is this so difficult? Why have we become afraid of the truth? And like all of our fears, the fears that tell us that we cannot understand a problem and that we cannot fix it originates in our childhood experience. Evolution has given all human beings an enormous array of potential capacities for knowing the truth in a diverse variety of circumstances. These include sensory perception, such as sight, hearing, smell, and touch, to provide accurate information about the external world. Feelings such as thirst and hunger, nausea and dizziness and physical pain to provide accurate information about the state of our body and what it needs. Memory to store and process access to learning from past experience. A truth register to detect lies and other misinformation. Intuition to listen to and remain in touch with the big picture of life as a whole. Conscious to enable us to make an act on those difficult moral choices that, for example, might ultimately require us to act against social conventions or unjust laws. More feelings such as fear and happiness and emotional pain and joy and anger and satisfaction and sadness and sexual ones and a vast variety of others to tell us what is happening for us in any given situation and to give us the power to behave appropriately in this context when the time is right. And the intellect to acquire, interpret, analyze, and evaluate information from these and other sources. Tragically, however, much of modern social life is seriously inhibited or even destroyed the development of these genetic potentialities by inflicting what I have called invisible or utterly invisible violence on us through our childhood, because they would make us powerful in ways that run counter to our society's wants. As a result, we become a socially constructed delusional identity. Let me repeat that. What are we? We are socially constructed. We are delusional as an entity, which is easy then to manipulate and coerce by society instead of becoming a powerful individual, our true self that evolution intended. For most of us, one outcome of this violence is that we learn to not trust ourselves and to fear the truth that is internally communicated to us. As a result, decision making is impaired. And hence, we only trust what is officially endorsed. Everything else becomes impossible to use. In contrast, powerful individuals who know the truth are not unthinkingly obedient. Powerful individuals trust their inner voice. As Gandhi called it, you should follow your inner voice, whatever the consequences. Despite the fact that our fear is often telling us that some problems are monumental and there's no way forward, well, in fact, there are sensible, straightforward solutions to virtually all of our problems. And while this will mean that we often need to change our own behavior, most of those changes will require little effort and can be easily accomplished. Of course, the genuinely powerful individual is able to take responsibility for making changes that set an example and inspire others to act too. In contrast, we wait for others to take the lead, or if we lobby elites to act on our behalf, we will usually find the experience pretty disempowering. They use us. In conclusion, we should not be afraid to know and act on the truth. That human violence in its many manifestations now has extinctions howling outside our door. Then we might also like to consider joining the worldwide movement of individuals coming together seeking the truth. And I'll just give you one final example of this. When I began to see people by the thousands at the Tri-State Healing Center in the early 1990s, reversing or improving what were otherwise life-ending conditions like advanced AIDS, advanced cancers, congestive heart failure, senility, Alzheimer's, and by asking what is the benefit of suppressing the symptoms compared to reversing their condition. One was that the patient remains fairly passive. The doctor or medical technician, which are what most doctors really are today, was being obedient to taking your medications or your medical procedures. And that was it. Little time spent with the person because the person was, well, they were broken. So the doctor was there to try to deal with whatever the break point was in its symptoms. I looked at it differently. I said, what would a body need in optimal state not to have cancer? And what would the body need to reverse diabetes or unclog an artery? And by using principles of prevention, I found that by accelerating them up and concentrating them at a higher dose, like higher doses of vitamin C, higher juices filled with polyphenols, instead of one juice a day of 12 ounces, how about 15 juices at 16 ounces? Well, that went against everything that the medical paradigm believed in. They didn't believe a juice had the same power as a drug. Yet they had no proof on their side for all the people they were facilitating their death from cancer using chemotherapy, and the science showed they didn't have anything on their side. But they did have something on their side. Everyone in power has something on their side. When you decide who's going to die and who's going to live and what rights they have and what rights they don't have, you have power on your side. In that moment, whether it's a month, a year, or a decade, you will get your way. In time, however, there will be people who will question the rightness, the legality, the ethics, the morality of what you've done. And they may or may not hold you accountable. But everyone who exercises power does so by defending that power and making sure anyone who can challenge it is stopped. Hence, in every revolution, every war, the very first thing that people do is they round up those who are considered independent thinkers, who are not afraid of the truth, the activist, and they destroy them. In Russia, Stalin purged millions of people. Mao Zedong purged millions of people. Hitler did the same. And McCarthy and J. Edgar Hoover in the 1950s, they did the same. The National Security Agency is doing the same. The President of the United States doing the same. So in this moment, they are right because they control the truth. They control access to the truth because they are the official gatekeepers of everything that is supposed to be the truth. So if you look at them and you look at their policies, you would not know there's another way of approaching world peace. You wouldn't know how people should be healthy because our current medical model does not promote health. It promotes disease. If you doubt me, then ask, why are we the sickest nation on the world? Why do we have more obesity and heart disease and cancers and diabetes? Why are we this mess? We have more doctors, we have more hospitals, we have more money spent than any place else in the world, and yet we're getting the worst results. Well, maybe our basic foundation is wrong. Ask anyone, any doctor, any nurse, any hospital administrator, any heads of insurance companies, anyone at the National Institutes of Health, the FDA, ask them, do we need more doctors and more drugs? And they'll say, yes, that's all we need. More research. And you have millions of scientists, or at least who pretend to be scientists, getting billions, hundreds of billions of dollars to do research that is worthless, for drugs that are dangerous, for medical procedures that shouldn't be done. Now imagine this $3 trillion a year industry and all the people who are supplicants to it, and compare that to getting a person to eat right, think right, act right, exercise, de-stress, clean up their environment, and re-empower themselves. Imagine millions, tens of millions of people believing completely in the power structure of truth, and individuals believing in the self-truth. You see the competition. You see what they will deny. They cannot afford for a second to allow this information out. If they do, it could cause a shift in the paradigm. So that's why they use force and violence. The state medical boards, the FDA, the AMA, these are agencies that suppress the truth and warn doctors and scientists and the public. Do not trust that. That is quackery. Do not believe in that person. They're loons. As a result, we are conditioned to be afraid of the truth. I'm Gary Knoll. Those are some thoughts. We're going to take a break and be back with my guest in a moment. Please stay with us. Welcome, all of you. We're going to go to my guest in a moment. He's out in New Mexico. I've given you his background, Greg Braden, and what we're going to talk about, creating individual and community resilience in a time of extremes. But just want to let you know that I had a chance when I got in early this morning to watch some of the dance parties over the years, over a 28-year period, that were made by home movie advocates and those that could be shown that at least had enough light in them. Most of them were too dark. It was wonderful to see the thousands and thousands of faces and people dancing and the hairstyles. And we put it up on my website, GaryNull.com, and also on Facebook. And I was looking at some of the people. I saw Kathy Davis and Alex Steinberg of WBAI. I saw Marie Dieter and Luann Panessi there. I saw all these people. And if you want to see how you looked, whether you were dancing or just enjoying watching it, go up and look at them. They're there. And I'm going to have, in the next 3-4 weeks, I'm going to put together another dance party and invite everyone who's ever been to any and those who haven't to come, and we'll spend the evening dancing. So I'm going to do that. It's going to be a lot of fun. Now, let's say hello to Greg Braden. Hi, Greg.
Gary, it is so good to hear your voice. I want to say hello to you and all of our listeners, and just let you know how excited I am to share this information with our listeners today.
Thank you. Greg, you're friends with Bruce Lipton, and we have a lot of respect for Bruce because he's given us an understanding of what happens at the cellular level based upon the environment of the people that we have been around in our lives, especially earlier in our lives.
Sure.
And how that then can manifest in inappropriate behavior and thoughts. Well, here in the United States, we're an extremely individualistic culture. We observe this especially among those who identify with the GOP or Libertarian or Tea Party principles, that more or less say that each of us are our own person and responsible for our own success or failure. And that's why social programs are so denigrated among those parties and groups. So basically, they're advocating people to be self-sufficient. Alternatively, we're proposing self-reliance, which is very different than self-sufficiency, because the latter isolates a person, whereas the former is based upon the interconnectedness of others. So I'd like you to begin by drawing the distinction between these two psychological modalities, because they are modalities based upon the beliefs people have of themselves and the world, and then speak on the errors of focusing on self-sufficiency and the prospects of self-reliance as more healthy for sustaining ourselves in an uncertain future. And my own caveat, I recently was a part of a health support group with a lot of the individuals in this audience as a fundraiser from one of the stations. And one of the questions that came to me was, Gary, what is the future? And I said, the future is we. The past was me and you individually. Think of the power we would have to make positive change and find joy in our lives and in our actions if we work on projects together instead of everyone feeling through their egotism or their insecurity that they had to take credit for everything they did without looking at the consequences to themselves of overdoing it, imbalancing themselves, insecurity and fear of being lonely or broke, whereas if you came together as a positive source of the future, then you have a future that's positive. Your thoughts, please.
Well, I couldn't agree more, Gary. You know, it all comes down to the way that we think of ourselves and our relationship to the world. You mentioned Bruce Lipton. He's a dear brother. He's a friend. He's a colleague. I've known him over 22 years now. We've toured the world together. He, as a biologist, my background, my training, my degrees are in the earth sciences. But the overlap between those two is that new discoveries, Gary, peer-reviewed science. So these aren't our opinions. They're not theories. They're not hypotheses. These are scientific facts. New discoveries are changing the way that we think of ourselves and our relationship to the world. And you would think that people would be very excited to hear that on the one hand. On the other hand, as you have described so well, there is a reluctance. In many cases, there's an outright resistance to sharing this information in the mainstream, the classrooms, the textbooks, and in the media. The bottom line of the new discoveries is that we are steeped as a society in 150 years of a story, a scientific story of separation, telling us that we're separate from our own bodies, that and powerless when it comes to healing our bodies, that we're separate from the world around us. And much of this is predicated on what is now a false, it is known to be a false Darwinian idea of survival of the strongest. So these are Darwin's own words, survival of the strongest, later interpreted as survival of the fittest. The new science is telling us just the opposite, that we're deeply connected to our bodies through thoughts, feelings, emotions, beliefs, and environment. We're deeply connected and interdependent with the earth. And what's really important, Gary, and I think this should be the core curricula in every classroom in the world right now, is that the science is telling us that nature is based upon a model of cooperation and what is called mutual aid rather than the violent competition that we've been led to believe. And while that competition certainly exists, I mean, we have to be honest and real about it, it exists, it's in response to very specific circumstances and conditions. It's not the rule of nature. So this would be interesting at any time. It's critical for us to understand this now because of where we are, the context of where we are in the world today. Our world is changing. I know our listeners, you know, it's not news to them. And the fact is that it's changing in ways that we've never seen, Gary, and in ways that we're simply not used to, and it's changing faster than we've been prepared to accept, and that we deal with the changes through the way we think of ourselves. So the lens of separation that we have been conditioned to see ourselves and the world in, that lens is the way we've been trying to solve these problems, and the result is the world that we have right now, the unsustainable ways of living and thinking that are collapsing. So the good news is that the new discoveries give us new ways to go about solving the problems and replacing the unsustainable systems if we're willing to embrace the deepest truths of what our own science is telling us about us and our relationship to the world. So this is where my overlap, Elizabeth Satoris, I know she's a guest on your program, she, Bruce Lipton, many others, and I, we are part of a leadership group. We meet for a week once a year and explore ways, innovative ways, to share this kind of information with the world. So the science knows what the new discoveries are all about. It's just getting this into mainstream thinking so that we can apply what we know to the reality of our world. And, you know, it just keeps coming to me, man, I just have tremendous respect for E.O. Wilson, a biologist. I think he sums this up so beautifully, Gary. He says that we are drowning in information while starving for wisdom, and that the world from this point forward is going to be run by people that he calls the synthesizers, people who are able to put together the right information at just the right time, think critically about it, and make their choices wisely. And I couldn't think of a better description for where we are in the world right now and what we're being asked to do. So it's kind of a long answer to a short question, but I wanted to lay that foundation a little bit as we get into this.
It's very easily understood, so thank you for that. There are different scenarios of transformation that I want you to talk about, including the idea that for most people, and I see this all the time, they will only consider transformation through a cataclysmic catastrophe, the idea that a global collapse or catastrophe will spark a radical shift in consciousness and give birth to a more aware future. However, if you took that to the individual level, it's a heart attack, it's a stroke, it's a diagnosis of cancer. Or on an interpersonal level, it's with another person, it's when they say, I'm leaving, and you say, why? Well, because when we first got together, you spent quality time with me. There was a different level of energy exchange. Now it's all about career and getting ahead or whatever, and you forgot the significance of the other in a relationship. And hence that kind of interpersonal collapse. And so I know, based upon so many people that I've communicated with, that we need a completely different way of shifting. The idea of a collapse sooner rather than later might be the only way to bring down the psychopathic oligarchy who have created immense suffering for larger and larger portions of humanity. And then the whole idea of how do we actually change without having to have a breakdown before we have a breakthrough, which has been the paradigm upon the whole self-sufficient movement for the last 40 years, is, well, you got to break down before you can break through. And I said, no, you don't. Share your thoughts, please.
Well, the key word here, self-sufficiency, there is a powerful difference between self-sufficiency and self-reliance. And the keys of that difference, and self-reliance is where we think and we live, and we learn to do as much as we can for ourselves, but we integrate what we've learned in a healthy way in our community. So that is self-reliance. Self-sufficiency in its truest form is where we consume only what we create for ourselves, and we don't need anyone else, and that simply is not realistic. So self-reliance, I think, is what biologists are really talking about now, is a key to adapting, Gary, to what is now being called our time of extremes. It's a fact that we are living a time of extremes. It doesn't mean that necessarily bad things have to happen, or even good things for that matter, but big things, big changes in our world that, as we mentioned, we don't have a good template to know how to deal with these changes. So one of the keys is to adapt to the changes rather than trying to impose our idea of what the climate 10 years ago should be, or our idea of the economy that is unsustainable at this point. Learning to adapt to the changes is one of the keys, and you've mentioned three ways to go about doing that. Some are more extreme than others. And I have this conversation, I have it with political leaders, government leaders, spiritual leaders, scientists, thinkers all over the world. And it's so interesting, Gary, that the different ideas, there are some that say the only way that this is going to happen, as you mentioned, is for everything to break and start all over again. There are others who, in an ideal world, say that, you know, we could, as societies, as nations, as a planet, we could bring leaders together if there was the degree of cooperation and the willingness to do this, and say, look, the world as it is now is no longer sustainable. Let's start anew. Let's take this time and build out new sustainable infrastructures, create the jobs to do that, create a fair and equitable and sustainable economy. That could happen. My sense is it probably will not, because of the degree of cooperation that is required and the lack of it in the world now. And that leads us to the third option that I think we're actually seeing unfold right now, and that it's a phased approach. And the phasing is that as systems buckle and collapse one at a time, they are being replaced. And this is our opportunity to replace them in life-affirming, healthy, conscious ways. Energy is one way, one place I think we're seeing this happen. Food, agriculture is another place. The key to all this, Gary, is as we go through our time of extremes, knowing that the climate isn't going to revert to the way it was 10 or 15 years ago, and there's very good science telling us that the climate change we're seeing now we'll see for our lifetimes, or the economy. The CBO is telling us that this is essentially the economy at least through the year 2023. So while we can do things consciously, wean ourselves from fossil fuels, go with clean, green, sustainable ways of living, the new normal that is emerging in our lives and our ability to adapt to that new normal, that is the key that stands between us and thriving and us struggling and suffering. And resilience, personal resilience, community resilience are keys to doing this. And as we accept our ability, and we're really good. Humans are good at adapting. We've been through ice ages. We've been through, you know, great depressions. We know how to adapt if we are given the opportunity and we embrace the opportunities to thrive and think differently. And it all comes back to the way we think of ourselves and our relationship to the world. So I think realistically, this third option, as systems break, for example, when we talk about climate or we talk about agriculture and economy, we can realize that decentralizing the way that we depend upon our food, decentralizing the way we depend on our energy, those are very good examples. And it's already happening. We're seeing farm-to-table, local, organic, green, sustainable farming all over the world. We're seeing the decentralization and the addition of sustainable ways of creating power, and we all know of some of these. Certainly solar and wind are big parts of that, but there are new methods coming online that very few people are hearing about now that make all the difference in the world. But all of that can only happen when we make it a priority in our lives, and that requires us to think very, very differently than we've ever thought before. And I think that's the key, Gary. Buckminster Fuller, I have so much respect for him. Before he died in 1983, I think he summed this up so beautifully. He said, you're never going to change things by fighting the existing reality. And I think there's so much truth to that. He says, if you want to change something, build a new model that makes the existing model obsolete. And that's where we are today. We are now asking ourselves to think and live differently than we ever have. And if we can base that upon the best science of today and what people, your guests and your program are sharing with us, the facts, the deepest truths of who we are, that is the foundation of the thinking for all the things that we're talking about in the world, beautiful, beautiful world that we know is possible. So it's another long answer to a short question, but I want to get all that in before the top of the hour.
Well, we're at the top of the hour now. What I want to do is invite you back to do an entire hour on our progressive commentary program mm-hmm. on creating a sustainable future.
I would be honored.
All right.
Absolutely.
Greg, thank you for being with us today.
Thank you so much, Gary.
His book is The Turning Point, Creating Resilience in a Time of Extremes. The website is greggbraden.com. I'm Gary Knoll. Thank you all for listening. Now let's say hello to Luann Panessi. Hi, Luann.
Hello, Gary. Wow. Thank you so much for that. It takes you to 100 places at once, but boy, information's put so simply and so easy to understand. Amazing. Now, we're getting a lot of solution-oriented people from your audience, and your people in California are really trying hard to say, oh, don't make us leave. Someone emailed me and suggested, since Israel has this phenomenal desalinization plant, why can't we take the waters from the Pacific and create desalinization plants all throughout the state? So we can get out of this drought, since the other suggestion of manipulating the weather didn't go over so well.
Three reasons. One, because desalinization plants are extremely expensive and use a phenomenal amount of energy. So they would be very polluting and contributing to the very thing that's causing the drought in California. Secondly, because you have to locate these on the point of water, which is the ocean. You cannot create a clean water from radioactive water. That's not possible. Now, we know that radioactive water is in the water around California. So it's only going to increase. Over the next 2 or 3 years, you'll have water that will become virtually so polluted you won't be able to go into the ocean unless you're going to be contaminating yourself. You won't be able to eat the seaweed or the fish from that area as well because it'll be contaminated. It is right now. It's just being covered up. And next, you couldn't get that water to then the places in the Central Valley that are away from the ocean. You realize California is very large, and you're talking about the coast. Now, how are you going to get that water, even if you were able to clean it up, into the inner part? And the amount of water you would need, you would have to have at least 10,000 desalinization plants to cover it. It's over for California as a sustainable environment. And then you had the San Andreas Fault, and you had the Pacific Rim of Fire. And so it's not, will a major earthquake happen there? It's just when. And you're in a permanent fire zone, and you're in congestion. So what is so important to risk your life and your future in an environment that is offering such limitations and dangers? There's a time when we have to change the chapter in our life and write a new one. And Californians, you've had your day. It's time now to look at your future. Thank you, Luann.
Okay.
Let's say hello to Utrice. Hi, Utrice.
Hello, Gary. Today we are focusing again on the trial. We finish up with the trial of the IRP6. That's a group of six men in a small software development company that found themselves being raided by the FBI and brought before the federal court on strange charges. We started the discussion on the strange trial, and it gets even stranger as we wind up the trial today. And, of course, questions from the listeners.
Great. Utrice Lead right now.